All right, tonight we're dealing with a very practical area. The title of the class called Lying for Profit versus Lying for Peace. And this is something that you have to deal with literally every day, every hour, maybe every minute. So we are dealing with this, of course. We talked about the last time we had a class, we dealt about the Sereta Dibrot, and now we're going into the Mishpatim, which are their the principles. So one of the Mishpatim we're going to get to is Midvar Sheker Tirchak. You should distance yourself away from lying. So in order to get us into the proverbial area, we of course start with a video, as you may have saw that coming. Okay. All right, let me get that set up. Okay. Here we go. This is Great Lies in U.S. History.
The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice.
This is not a program where we're listening to phone calls inside the United States.
What about other drugs?
No. No. I never have.
Rabbi, there's no video.
Never have and never will.
Hold on, what was it? You're not hearing any videos?
No, we didn't hear it.
I'm not seeing a video. We're only
hearing it. Hold on, one second. Oh, hold on. Take two. We will reshare the screen.
The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice.
This is not a program where we're listening to phone calls inside the United States.
What about other drugs?
No. No. I never have. Never have and never will.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
This says $730,000 drug habit. This is a headline.
Come on.
How about you? Are you posting under phony names?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All right, you get the basic idea. We don't have to...
Ragone told one blogger, lighten up. And just...
All right, so that goes into that part. All right, so... clearly, these are some of the famous ones. All right, famous politicians lying. Okay, so we'll start off with some basic questions here. Why did Nixon lie about Watergate?
Because he thought he'd get away with it.
Right, he wanted to. Yes, he. I mean, actually, he won the 1972 election, and this happened prior. And he thought that it was so properly the cover up was so properly well done, and as Stephanie said, he'd get away with it.
No, but your question was, why did he lie, or why did he do it?
He did it because he felt that he was going to lose the 1972 presidential election.
Right.
Why did he lie? Because, well, you know, let's go. Because,
well, I think he lied because he knew the repercussions would be terrible, and the reason why he did it in the first place would be, you know, would annul the result, which was his election, and he would have to.
That he would get impeached. In order, he lied because he didn't want to get impeached.
Right.
And be disgracefully removed from office, which ultimately he did. He removed himself. He resigned in 1974 and then was pardoned by the next president, President Gerald Ford. Okay. Let's go a little closer, John. Why did George W. Bush lie or exaggerate about what's happening in Iraq? I mean, this is
It gets this support, hopefully, in his hope, I guess, hopefully, of the country behind what he wanted to do. So he was exaggerating something in order to try and get support.
Right, now you could argue, like, he relied on his intelligence, and now he may have forcefully articulated it, he may have pushed it a little more beyond the certainty. That's actually the more grayer area, okay? But he wanted to take down Saddam Hussein. He wanted, you know, so that's the little bit more less clear situation, you know. I'll grant you that. But let's get to a little bit more. Why did Mr. Clinton lie about Monica Lewinsky?
Well, it depends on what your definition of sexual relations is.
Right, so technically, right, he became a Talmudic scholar. He became a Talmudic scholar.
Every day differently.
That's exactly what it is.
Right. And now the truth is, from a halachic standpoint, he did not have sexual relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. He was correct. But he was trying to communicate that he did not have, an inappropriate sexual affair in the White House. But why did he lie? Let's get to the basics here. Simple.
Same reason as Nixon. He thought he was going to get away with it.
Okay. One, yes. What else? Well, but why didn't he say... Or let's say he said, yeah, I have this intern, and we had a consensual, you know, inappropriate relationship. You know, why didn't he go that way?
I think he thought it would go away.
Exactly. It's admitting guilt, and it's...
Well, if he's not guilty...
Was it for base? show him by it?
Right. Obviously, this was not going well with... Hillary, so right, you know, that's number one. In other words, he wanted to cover up his. He has a flaw. He has a tendency of, you know, well, fairly well documented of having inappropriate affairs with women. This is before the Me Too thing about, you know, issue. Back then they didn't have the issue about, you know, the. The asymmetrical element of power. In other words, the authoritative, the boss, that was not as well developed as it became, you know, in the whole Me Too movement. But basically, he was embarrassed. He was publicly shamed. And quite frankly, in his own mind or thought or rationalized it, look, this is my issue. It's a private issue. It's got nothing to do with the well-being of the policy of the United States. So... I'm going to lie, hopefully not perjure myself, and it'll move on. It'll, you know, this is, as Max says, this is an issue of shalom bias. This is an issue really between him and Hillary and Monica. Ain't nobody else's business. So therefore, in order to maintain his sense of personal dignity, that he has, that he's a moral person, or he's an ethical person, or he's a person of character that is worthy of the position of the President of the United States, he lied. Or he said, he didn't lie, he said a precise legalistic statement that would convey that he had no affair when, you know, he had, you know, a sexual relationship with her. It wasn't sexual intercourse. You know what I mean? It was a legalistic dodge. Okay, so but just going through all the things, then we get to Donald Trump. There's limitless daily. I mean, he's like in a different pantheon of lying. It's a daily phenomena. I don't really know how to isolate anything. But why is lying one of his things in his tool chest in all of his in defending his anything?
I think it's further than that. Like, I think he has like a psychological profile that he doesn't even differentiate between truth and lies and like reality of the world versus his own reality, what he wants to be reality. And that's why he'll just like blurb anything that he'll, like, there's no understanding of the power of facts and, like, the line. Like, he'll just be like, whatever I think is correct, and that is the truth. Like, this psychological complete.
All right, so I don't know. I don't know if he's psychotic. I don't know if that's quite there, but he's like an extreme salesman, and he'll just say whatever he needs to say, with a customer or audience that he's in front of to present information the best possible way, with no ethical qualm of it being true, kind of true, doesn't have that filter.
But, like, if there was some sanity after being caught out, like, the first few months, like, you would think he would learn this on it. If he was just a pure salesman, he would see it's not a good sales technique.
But the truth is, but one second, he is still our president. I mean, just to go back, remember when that tape of the Hollywood Access tape came out? Everybody thought this dude is not going to win the presidency, okay? He basically admitted to engaging in basically sexual assault, you know, in a kind of way, not maybe not legalistically, but basically using his sense of authority, using his celebrityness to take advantage of women. Now, I guess there's consensual. I mean, I'm not going to, but you know, everybody thought, including many people on his own staff, that he's done. But he just, you know, that is locker room talk. He just kept with his messaging, and the dude made it out, and he won the presidency. You know, and his stalwarts, which is 40% of America, no matter what, are with him. So he would be, you know, just objectively, his strategy is effective in a certain sense. If you're looking at effectiveness. He's still there. You know what I mean?
In what?
As a president, in order to toward his goal. I'm not saying as far as lying or bending the truth or shading the truth or, you know, he's not doing anything differently than all the other presidents before him, but it's on a qualitatively new level. That's the point.
Well, and he doesn't face any repercussions for it.
He's very adept at counterattacking, as being an effective political animal. You know, he's been called down and out like a million times. He might and he still might win 2020. That is not out of the question. Whether you felt that he did an extremely horrible job with the COVID virus, mediocre job, whatever you want to say. Nobody says he's for sure out of the cards. And if it was before COVID, he was like, because the economy was so strong, he's likely to win. Now it's not so simple. So we'll see. But our topic is not politics per se. They're just good examples of lying. So let's get to the videotape over here. Let's get to some of the topics. Let's go. Here we go. First source, which is from the book of Parsha Mishpatim. All right, let me have Chloe read it out.
Shemot. Midvar sheker tichak v'naki v'tzedik el ta'areg ki lo atzedik rasha. Distance yourself from a lie and do not kill a truly innocent person. For one who has been declared innocent, for I will not vindicate a guilty person.
Excellent. Perfect. So what the pasuk here is really an instruction to the judge. The judges, when they're, you know, for example, it says they not only, of course, you can't lie, but when they're not allowed, in other words, they don't have in a Jewish court, there's no jury. It's at least three or more judges, and both the litigant and both parties who have a dispute have to present their information, their case, in front of the other. It would be a violation of Midvar Sheker of lying just to hear one account without hearing the other person, okay? Because that would automatically give a bias to that person, okay? Because he's the person's with the other litigant He's going to be forced to say what he's saying is true, because he has other guy who he's fighting with, would counterclaim. So not only does it mean, notice the word midvar sheker tircha, you have to stay away from a lie. In other words, not simply, obviously lying is forbidden, but any kind of things that will be have a character of lying. But I want to get to, our goal tonight is very simple, is we're all told that, honesty is the best policy as little children. Honesty is the best policy. But the reality is, we all lie. And we all lie every day. And we're going to learn tonight that there are times that you must lie. Okay? We're going to go into that. And there are times that it's absolutely forbidden to lie. And I also want to get into why is lying so horrible? What is the problem with it? So let's go to the case. Now, that's the source. Let's go to, we're taking you to Mishlei Proverbs. I'm going to do a share screen again. Alrighty. Okay. All right, Max, read me out second source. You're on mute.
That better?
Yeah.
Yigrat Adonai Rashis Da'as Chachma U'Musar Erolim Bazu.
Yes.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but the foolish despise wisdom and discipline.
Beautiful. Okay. So we see here, this is a book, this is from Proverbs, Mishlei. Mishlei is organized, there's always an A and a B part of the Pasuk, just to know in general how. Okay, so, and they oftentimes contrast each other. So we have the first phrase that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Well, we need to understand that. And then, wisdom and rebuke the foolish degrade or despise. Let's start with the second part because I think it's easier. Why does a fool hate musar? Musar means, can be, they translate as discipline or rebuke. Why would a person not want to be corrected, critiqued?
Embarrasses them, hurts their feelings.
Why does it embarrass them and hurts? Let's say they don't do it in public. Why, when you speak to a colleague or a person who subordinate, and they did a poor job of a particular thing? Why will oftentimes, or the challenge you have to do as being a supervisor, is to provide criticism and a critique in a way that they'll accept it, because the fool will reject it. Why is the general stance rejection?
Because they don't want to admit they're wrong.
Daphne, very good. Why don't they want to admit they're wrong?
Because then they have to change how they do something or acknowledge that they're not correct. I guess
100%. And therefore, so that's the key. The key element here is that a person is resistant to change. And if you've pointed out, even if you've done the best possible way, that something is lacking, inadequate, poorly executed, a mistake was done. So the wise person will embrace the criticism because they want to grow, they want to get better. But the fool, the avil, wants to reject it. And now, what is the tool of the what will they do to defend themselves if they've done a poor job or if they've made a mistake? What is a number one tool of choice?
Blame someone else.
Blame somebody else. What else?
Deny.
Defend it?
Well, they'll defend it, they'll deny it, or they'll lie. In other words, all those politicians are trying to protect their brand, protect their identity. Okay? That they are who they say they are. So instead of accepting I was wrong and I'm going to do better, and not only that, I appreciate you taking the time to point out what went wrong here so I can do a better job next time, which is the wise person's attitude. A chacham, a wise person, loves musar, loves critiques, because they're interested in growth. If you're a growth-loving person, you want a person to help you out not in an aggressive way, but to show where you've gone wrong, what you've done wrong, how you can improve. And that really is, when a person gets confronted with the fact that they were limited, the natural psychological knee-jerk reaction, which is the source of most lies, is to protect my reputation as being a competent, accomplished, successful person. You know what I'm saying? It takes a bigger person, a bigger woman or a bigger man, to say, you know something? You're 100% correct. I was wrong. And I appreciate you making that point out to me. And I want to do it better next time. So that's the number. In other words, the lying is the tool of choice for cover-up. To be able to maintain, I don't want to do the hard work of getting better. I just want to have the being perceived as being better without doing any of the work. Okay? That's a major source of lying. So let's say I messed up. Okay? So let's say it was my job to wash up all the dishes, clean up the house. And my wife confronts us and says, Penny, hey, it's your night tonight and you didn't clean up. What's going on? So I could deny, what, tonight? Oh, I didn't realize. Lie, didn't know, okay? So I'm really covering myself saying, so therefore I can have the image of being the thoughtful, considerate husband. I can maintain that image with, of course, not doing a damn thing. Now, wouldn't that be awesome? Okay? Or I could take the hit and say, you know something? You're right. I apologize. I won't do it. And I'm doing it now. Okay? So our natural tendency is, the default setting is to lie, because the cover-up seems frequently an easier way to get out of difficult situations, the painful recognition that I'm not as good as I'm trying to present myself as being. I'm not as competent as I want people to perceive myself as being. I'm more sensitive. I'm more understanding. I'm more helpful. I'm more everything. And with a lie, I'm getting out of that. Or so I think. Or so I hope. Okay? So that's point number one. Is that point clear? Questions? So succinctly, why should a person be a lover of truth?
To grow and become a better person, basically?
Yes, exactly. In other words, you cannot have, there is no personal growth. Personal growth, professional growth, without 100% honesty. A true friend is a person who tells you when you've done something wrong. As they say, who calls you out on stuff. Now, will your friends tend to call you out on stuff?
Not all the time.
Why not?
They don't want to hurt your feelings. They're your friends.
Yeah, but why don't they want to hurt your feelings?
Because most people have a hard time accepting, like you said, hearing critiques about them. So it's almost easier, even though it's friends, you want to be helpful and be honest. Sometimes you just don't want people to be upset.
Is that really the reason, or it goes a little more deeper than that?
Because they won't be your friend?
That's it. It's 100% selfish. In other words, we're friends because we have this unspoken covenant, which is, I will not point out your limitations. You won't point out my limitations. I'm going to always promote your brand. You're going to promote my brand. And that's how we're going to live this unspoken lie. And we're going to call it a friendship. True or not true?
I think it's true with majority of friendships, but I think it depends on the type of friendship you have with the person.
I think people need to be more, right, I think people are generally, like, get afraid of confrontation, but sometimes
right. You
have to, like, name it, otherwise it affects your relationship.
Yes, now, there is a tremendous wisdom, and obviously I'd be remiss not to mention Dale Carnegie's writings on this particular, of how to point out people's limitations. You know, and he has many nice principles. I gave a sheer much earlier in the fellowship, comparing and contrasting Dale Carnegie and the Rambam, which is the Rambam just grabbing various statements of the Chazal, of the rabbis, and showing basically it's the same principles. So,
who came out better, Rambam or Carnegie?
Well, I said they're really saying the similar point.
Could you share that? I would love.
Well, that's a sheer. I'll share. I'll share a link of the class, of the audio of the class. I can share that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll remember to do that.
Let me write. How to win friends and influence people.
How to win friends and influence people, but specifically how to do the difficult task. As Stephanie's correct, people do not like confrontation. In other words, his rule one of just to know in Hilchos Dale Carnegie. Number one is that you shall not criticize, condemn, or critique anybody. If you want to, you know, that's his first rule. Well, the problem is, and they're right, and that's what basically what Anna was saying. You know what I mean? If you want to have a long-term relationship with a person, you won't not be criticizing their, calling out or naming their bad behavior. So he deals with that in a separate book, actually. Of how to do that, recognizing that that is necessary. If you're a supervisor, if you are, again, if you're, according to what I'm saying, you know, being a true friend. Now, again, the rule is, let me just, what is, he has the, yeah, one second. I think it's part of how to win friends and influence people. Give me a second here. Fundamental. One sec. Give me a second. This is just a. Give me one second. Yes, in his section called Be a Leader, How to Change People Without Giving Offense or Arousing Resentment, his rule one, of course, you begin with praise and honest appreciation. Number two, call attention to people's mistakes indirectly. In other words, allow them to save face. It goes back, since the average person is, as Mishle calls them, a nevil, a fool, and they don't love wisdom and rebuke poured straight up, neat, no rocks. They don't want to handle that. So you got to do it indirectly. Okay? And then he says, talk about your own mistakes before criticizing other people. So yeah, let other people, person save face. So he has all kinds of just fantastic ideas about how to do this. So that's a classic. Check it out. How to Win Friends with People. Check out Wikipedia. Has a nice summary of everything and et cetera. Now, let's keep on going in our learning. So just to review, the reason for lying is covering up, maintaining my identity and my sense of wonderfulness. Conversely, the value of being a truth seeker and a truth speaker is that growth means I have to have an honest assessment of where I am and where I'm going. If I want to live in a fantasy world, I'm not going to grow. Okay? I'm going to maintain the status quo. So that's what we're up to so far. Let us continue learning. Okay. Now, let's talk about...
Is this why the prophets were always alone?
Yes, nobody liked them. Because they didn't share...
No friends. They're all
I mean...
No friends, buzzkill.
Well, it's ironic you mentioned that, because one of the prophets was Elisha. And and one of the characters is the Isha Shunammite, the Shunammite woman. And this is when her son dies, okay, or comes close to death. And she does, and she's like a smart woman. This is a case where the woman is clearly the smart woman in the story, and the guy is like not so sharp. And he says, the husband asks, well, where are you going? I'm going to speak to the prophet. I want to go speak to the prophet, to Elisha. And the guy says, well, why are you going there? It's not Shabbat or Rosh Chodesh or Yom Tov. From that one line, what do you see? That basically the only time that they went to hang out with the prophet was like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when, okay, he's a rabbi, but he's giving the drasha. We have to listen. But otherwise that, if it's like a Tuesday, we're not hanging out with that guy. He's like too much reality. It's like, I am not going to leave there feeling better than I came. Okay? Being in his presence made me feel woefully inadequate, and I just can't handle that. That's the assumption of the guy's question, right? Why are you going to the prophet? Now, if I said to you, how would you like to go to somebody who got a authentic, non-psychotic communication from God? Would you like to spend a half an hour with that person, whether it be a female prophet or a male prophet? Would you say yes? You say, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but,
of course. But that's no, not fun. These people he's down this road. You can go visit Alicia anytime you want. Don't want to hang out with that guy. It's too much reality. It's like, okay, it's like enough.
It's a lonely business.
It is a lonely business because it's it.
It's not a profitable, being a prophet may not be that profitable either.
Touche there, Max. That's it. They called it, in other words, when he received a thing, when he received a prophecy, it was called a masa. It's like a burden. In other words, he had to share it, even though he knew that, quite frankly, people would like punch him. He was, you know, there were prophets that were murdered by Jews. Zechariah the prophet was murdered on the Temple Mount campus by Jews.
Wow. Wow.
So, to be a truth, to be a speaker to power and a speaker to truth is a dangerous business.
The Jonah story becomes a lot better, like, accordingly.
Yes, it's not, we think we want the truth, as Jack Nicholson so eloquently said, you cannot handle the truth. And that's the MS. We need MS taken like with an eyedropper. Boop, boop. A couple of drops at a time. I'm good, Rabbi. We're good to go. Not as enough. Slow down the truth there. Okay. We continue. All right. We're going to go to the little... Okay. The Rambam talks about this. All right. Let's have Shana read it out.
Rambam laws of character traits. A person is forbidden to act in a smooth-tongued and deceiving manner. He should not speak one thing outwardly and think otherwise in his heart. Rather, his inner self should be like the self which he shows to the world. What he feels in his heart should be the same as the words on his lips.
Stop right there. So the Rambam says, the person, you got to be an honest person. He cannot be smooth tongued and deceiving. He can't be a liar.
A rasha inside, you got to be a rasha outside, basically.
Well, it doesn't mean you have to. In other words, to manipulate people, we're gonna go a little further. We're gonna get into that. In other words, he's talking about the prohibition of being fake and manipulating people, communicating that you have a relationship with a person when in fact you don't. Let's keep on going.
Are we positing a little bit, though, that all friendships are kind of this way?
We're going to get to that. We have a thesis and we have the antithesis. We're going to get both components, both sides of the story here. Keep on going there, Shana.
It is forbidden to deceive people, even a non-Jew. For example, one should not sell a Gentile the meat of an animal which has not been ritually slaughtered, as if it were ritually slaughtered meat.
Okay, let me stop right there. In other words, like this. Let's say you have a butcher shop, and a non-Jew says, I want to have some Glock kosher meat because I heard it's fantastic. You're thinking to yourself, great, I got to get rid of this non-kosher, you know, this meat that became not kosher. Let me sell it to this guy. Now, assuming it's the same price, we're not talking about if you sell him, you sell a non-Jew meat as kosher meat that's costing $10 a pound, and it only costs you $5 a pound, that's, and it's really not kosher, that's called theft. That's regular stealing. Well, here we're talking about genevat dat, literally the stealing of his mind, or what you call in America, fraudulent misrepresentation. You're weaseling the guy. But let's say it's the same price. You cannot tell him that this is kosher meat when, in fact, it's not kosher meat, even if the price is the same. Okay? Because you're he's living with a lie. Keep on going.
Nor a shoe made from the hide of an animal which has died of natural causes, as if it were made of the hide of a slaughtered animal. One should not press his colleague to share a meal with him when he knows that his colleague will not accept the invitation. Nor should he press presents upon him when he knows that his colleague will not accept them. He should not open casks supposedly for his colleague, which he must open for sale, in order to deceive him into thinking that they have been opened in his honor. The same applies with all matters of this sort. It is forbidden to utter a single word of deception or fraud. Rather, one should have only truthful speech, a proper spirit, and a heart pure from all deceit and trickery.
Okay, so let me flesh this out with some proper cases. Let's say back in the day when we had Shabbos Company, which God willing we'll have soon in our day, okay? And you know Joe already is going to somebody else's house. But you say, Joe, can you come for Shabbos? Oh, you can't? Oh, that is so bad. Oh, so disappointing. Now, why will people do that?
They come across as being, someone who's inviting and hospitable, but in reality, that's not what they want, but they know they come across that way, so it satisfies, you know, all aspects of what they need to happen.
You get the credit without having to do anything.
Bingo! In other words, he now has created a social debt, a little social debt. Now, Joe, you know, that guy was so nice inviting me for Shabbos, maybe we should invite them. In other words, creates a social debt without actually paying any, in other words, without, as he incurred a debt without having to do anything. Or, let's say you go to a diabetic and you have a box of chocolates. Oh, would you like this? Here, can I give you a box of chocolates? Oh, you can't have it? Oh, so disappointing. Or, you know, guy walks in, comes over to your house on Friday night, time for the oneg, and you have a bottle of 18-year-old bottle of scotch. Now, you're opening up for yourself. But he walks in at that time and says, oh, Joe's here? Joe, for you, nothing but the best. And you open up the bottle of scotch, claiming you're doing it for him, but reality you're doing it for yourself. Because you want to squeeze out, as Scott said, a social debt without doing anything. You misrepresented, in other words, he now thinks your relationship is here, when reality it's here. It's based upon a lie. Is that clear? This is called Genevas Das.
It sounds, unfortunately, like a lot of people on the West Side. I mean, it's very...
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people, period.
Like religious people.
Could be. So we're going to get...
Shots fired.
What?
Shots fired.
Right, so look. The bigger challenge is in the world of sales. Both as let me talk about how prospective customers do it to sellers. For example, many people back when the malls were open would go to a big box store and go to a salesman and ask them 17,000 questions about, well, what is the best flat screen TV, and like suck the guy dry for data information to make the decision, and then go back home and order the TV on Amazon because it's $50 less. That's Geneva Stas. You cannot speak to a salesperson who's investing in time with you when you have zero interest in purchasing it. You can't because you're hustling that person.
What if you went to Best Buy and you talked to a guy, whatever, right, and asked him about this TV, and then you went home and you bought it on Best Buy, not Amazon?
Okay, so I guess as long as
you're not giving the guy the commission,
right? He's not getting the commission,
right?
So he's not getting the commission. So if the person's investing now, if you say, look up front, like, let me be honest, you know, what if you say, look, you know, if you know for sure you're not going to buy it at Best Buy, to ask the guy anything more than like a 1 second of questions is going to have a stuff, because now again, they also know about this, so they themselves know they're being hustled. So whatever that amount is that the reasonable goes by, what would the reasonable person assume? But if you're communicating, I have interest to buy, and he's getting excited that he can make a sale here, and you don't, that's Geneva's Das. Conversely, you know, a salesman like, you know, being, you know, over complimentary about, you know, the wisdom and taste about the customer. Oh, that, you know what I mean? When they're like going overboard and they're with, you know, in Yiddish, they're schmeichling up the customer, that's also a Geneva's Das. Now the person knows what's going on.
I hate when like associates or something who don't help me make the sale and they're ringing me up and then they're extremely complimentary about what I bought. Like, I don't need your opinion.
Yeah, but they're on automatic Geneva's Das modal, you know. Oh, that outfit looks fantastic.
Like, no, the best is when they like won't help you when you're like walking around. Like, they couldn't be bothered, and then you're like actually buying all these things, and they're like, "Oh, can I help you now?"
Right? Can I help you ring you up? Right? Exactly. Right.
Can I put my name down?
Right? Can anyone help you? No.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So we talked about the pitfall of lying. The degree we have to be careful is truthful. Now, but now we get to the last key, because there are times that one should lie. And then we're going to try to find the key element is when are you not allowed to lie, and when must you lie? That's our goal for tonight. We have a couple minutes left. Let's get into it. Here we go. All right, Stephanie Bavakasha, read out the last paragraph.
Okay. To refined Torah scholar who only lies because of peace, tractate, bed, and the home of hospitality, is trusted to reclaim lost property only with mere recognition, without a sign on the object. What is meant by the above?
Okay, so 1 second. So let me explain that. In other words, in general, if you are claiming a lost object, okay, you have to be able to prove that it's yours, right? And that's based upon what they call a siman, a sign. You tell a person, that's my mitt, because it has, if you look at the in part of the glove, it has scraped on it a P and an R. You know what I'm saying? So I'm providing a siman, a sign, that in fact that mitt is in fact mine. You know what I'm saying? A refined Torah scholar who only lies for four categories is even given the assumption of truth-telling, even if he does not have a siman. It's something which has no siman. And he says, that book is mine. Oh, there's no name in it. There's that. We trust him. And we give it to him. Now, so the Rambam can talk about the four cases in which you are permitted to lie. Let's go on.
If he was studying the tractate of Nida and said that he was studying the tractate of Mikvot so that he would not be asked about the Nida laws,
all right, so that's case one. The case number one is that basically he does not feel comfortable answering these, you know, these difficult questions. So instead of saying, hey, I'm an idiot, you know, he says, I'm not studying that. I'm not eligible to answer those questions. I'm studying something else. He's lying to the person.
But is he lying because of modesty, because of the nature of Nidala, or
no? He doesn't feel he's up to the job.
Gotcha.
So he wants to avoid the whole conversation. Well, what do you mean? Are you being falsely modest? He doesn't want the stress. Look, halakhically, if you have the knowledge to paskin, and this is true for a woman or a man, if you know the material, you have to give the answer. But he doesn't feel comfortable, and he wants to avoid, you know, talking about that. So he just said, "I'm learning something else, and I'm not in that topic right now." All right, case number two.
He slept in one bed, but said that he slept in another, less signs of a seminal emission he discovered in the bed in which he slept.
Okay, basically, he's lying just to avoid something embarrassing. Right? He's lying, lest he be embarrassed. Personal embarrassment. Okay? So you're allowed to lie to avoid being personally shamed. Go on.
He stayed at Reuven's home, but said that he stayed at Shimon's home so that others would not trouble Reuven. This makes no sense to me.
All right, so in other words, let's say there's a person on the West Side that is a phenomenal host, and everybody wants to go there. But you're worried that people are going to take advantage, but they are also subject to being taken advantage of. You know what I'm saying? People come, you know, call them up on Thursday, and they always say yes. And they're really being, in other words, they're hosts that are being abused. You know what I'm saying? You know that there are people.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you do is you say, oh, he says some other name. Just through this family, this people will not be oversubscribed and be hassled. Let's go on.
Okay. He made peace between two people and added and subtracted from the statements each one of them made to heighten their feelings of closeness. Such deceptions are permitted. If, however, witnesses came and testified that he made other false statements, there is no obligation to return an article that he claims to have recognized.
Okay, so basically, if you have a Torah scholar that is 100% careful that they only lie in these kind of cases, then his level of trustworthiness is very high, and he can claim an object without a sign and give it to him. But if they have witnesses that he did lie about other areas, then he doesn't have that status and you don't have to give it to him. But I want to focus on that. He made peace between two people. Let's just focus on this case, okay? Let's talk about all the typical cases. You see your friend at a party, or let's say, God willing, well, one time we'll have the MJ dinner. At some point in time, okay? Right, Shayna? We're looking forward to that. And the woman says to you, so what do you think of this dress? And you think it's not so good. You are obligated to lie from Shalom because she can't do anything about it now. You're just going to make her feel bad. I think, like you say, it looks fantastic. It's a great color on you. Very slimming. Okay? You say that. Now, when are you not allowed to? So you're lying for Shalom. For personal well-being of that person, okay? You're trying to broker. Let's say there's a people who are not talking to each other, and you're trying to broker a reconciliation. So you're allowed to be, you're able to counter the other person's negativity by sort of shaping or reshaping the story in a way that gives a chance of bringing people back together. You know what I'm saying? If the goal is to restore the relationship. Now, and it's not for personal gain. Like you saw, for personal gain, to hustle somebody, you can't even say one word. If the purpose is to create a peaceful reconciliation or peace among people, or to avoid personal shame, you know what I'm saying? Let's say a person went to the proctologist, okay? Nobody likes to be happy. Nobody's making a, hey, Joe, where were you? I went to the dentist. He doesn't have to admit that he went to the proctologist because that's very embarrassing. So you're allowed to avoid being personally shamed. It's not for a personal gain. You're not trying to get, you know what I'm saying? You're allowed, for your own personal dignity, to not share every single thing. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let me give another example. How about this situation? You have a report work. You have a report at work due on Thursday. And then Thursday afternoon, your boss says, "Hey, Joe." Joe's my example for all these. So, Joe, where's your report? Now, meanwhile, you just finished watching the entire Fauda season on Thursday and didn't get to it. So you say, Mr. Bean, I am terribly sorry. I've been dealing with computer issues all day long. I got IT working on it, and I hope to have it to you thing by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Okay? Otherwise known as lying to cover your tushy. CYA. Is that permitted?
Yes, because you'd lose your job if you told the truth, maybe.
Are you allowed to lie to that's a question. Are you allowed to lie save your job?
I don't think so. It's like a white lie.
Well, if it is one, but if it impacts other people and their trustingness in you, then it's
what if you have a family?
Well, maybe you didn't want, maybe you maybe you want to, maybe have not watched entire season of Fauda, during your work day.
If you have a family, then do your work.
Right. So I don't.
Like you were babysitting your kids, then right.
Then you'll say, you'll go, you know, the direct, honest approach. Look, I need an extension. My kids, who I thought I'd be able to, that's something separate. I'm talking about a case where you just people screw around and they try to cover up with lying. This happens only every day.
They're gone. I have a great story about this. Actually.
The answer is you gotta man or woman up and face the music. Halachically, you cannot lie your way out of that.
Penny, I think Stephanie's got a story and is leaving the station.
All right, I want to hear the story. Go ahead, Stephanie.
No, it's okay. All right. So when I worked at the Federation in Northern New Jersey, I was in charge of the Melton Jewish Education Program, and someone was supposed to be the coordinator for it, and it snowed. And so because most of the class are seniors, we decided to cancel classes. She lied to me and told me she called them. I found out later she did not. Luckily, no one got hurt. Most people just decided on their own not to go. We then called it, we emailed out or whatever. But I caught her in the lie that she and people's safety was at risk. And she lied to me. She was fired 2 days later.
Okay.
After discussing it with our lawyers. But basically, because you can't, that's like not a trustworthy thing. And it's not something, you had a job to do. And you lied about whether you did it. And, you know, this particular thing could have been a real problem.
Right.
In terms of people's safety. But.
So correct. So 100%. I mean, also, if we're what Judaism is trying to promote, a commitment to truth for self-growth, and by extension, our relationship with Hashem. You cannot know Hashem if you want to live in a fake world. So we want to try to create a world of MS, a world of truth as much as possible. The counterpoint, in order to have a society, there is people's emotions, and you have to, for shalom, what they call mishane mipnei hashalom, exaggerate for peace. Okay? So if your friend says, now here's an interesting point. Do you have to say the truth every single time? What is another option? Very important option.
Don't say anything.
Not saying anything. A chacham does not say anything that will not be heard. So if you have that friend and you want to share that criticism, but you know that you don't have the skill set or they're not in the particular place to hear it, then you don't say it. You know what I'm saying? That's another point. So the case in the Talmud is as follows. Person's walking toward a city, person's walking out of the city, the guy walking towards the city says, "Oh, you came out to greet me? That is so marvelous. Thank you so much." And so it was two guys coming to meet this guy who was another rabbi. And so the guy said, "Well, we're not coming out to meet the guy. Why don't you correct him?" He says, "I didn't fool him. He fooled himself." So it goes by the reasonable man, in other words, what by saying something or by not saying something, and the person gets a wrong idea, it has to go, what would the reasonable person assume? Okay? So if they think that you came out all here, if a reasonable person says that you did this thing and you don't correct them, and a reasonable person would assume that they did do this good deed, you would have to clarify that for them. Now, I was here anyways, and I'm happy to see you. You know, you can't take the credit for something that you did good, which you were not doing for that person. Okay, there's so many cases. Let me throw out some more cases. Well, let's see like this. So, on the job, well, I've already spoken enough. Give me classic cases of lying, which is, or issues of lying that come up on a regular basis. What's the most classic examples that we've not really covered?
What about lying by omission, like purposely leaving out a detail?
The lying by omission. So what do you guys say? Simone says, what about lying by omission?
It's still lying, yeah.
Well, you're not saying anything.
Is lying through an act of commission of, or we saw from Geneva's Das is, in other words, the guy asked, the case was like this, the non-Jew comes to the butcher shop and says, "I would like to have some glatt kosher steaks." And you have non-kosher steaks. Or non-glot kosher steaks, and you hand him, and you don't say a word. But by you hand him and not saying a word, by context, as a reasonable man, reasonable person, they are believing that they're getting what they're saying. So if you leave out a fact, and the reasonable person would believe that the truth is something else, then you must clarify. You know, this, you know, for example, let's say you have a car that has a crack in the carburetor. Okay? And you're selling the car. Here it is. So, in America, it's buyer beware. Well, you know, you have to assume that the guy is going to try to screw you over. In Halacha, it's seller beware. You must tell them of all the things you know about the limitations of the product. Or you can say, look, this car has issues. I'm selling it as it is. Know what it is. You know what I'm saying? But you have to tell the person what if you know there's a systemic problem. You must tell them that. That's actually not Geneva's Das. That's a regular old Geneva. Or they call it Ramaot, of being deceptive in business where there's going to be a financial consequence. Okay, so we have straight out lying, CYA lying, covering your tushy. We have fraudulent misrepresentation, Gnevas Das, to be able to get a benefit based upon the social asset that you got. We have lying in business where you don't talk about something material, which the reasonable person would assume you would tell. You know, they're getting a car, a product, and you leave out important information. You're responsible. It's a different. It's a different world than we see. Unfortunately, we live in a world that is mostly Sheker is Sheker is accepted from our president on down. This, you know, we're really talking about a countercultural mentality here. What other cases? We got 1 or 2 minutes left. Give me a thought. How about, let's talk about truth in dating. Talk about dating. We didn't talk about dating. It's not. Can it be an MG class without talking about dating? I'm not sure. So, like, let's say you're on that first date and you're presenting your first date stories. We all had those stories, you know? And you're basically marketing yourself to the person to allow, you know, that you tell a story, and who tends to be the hero of the story? You do, but not in such a bragging way, but just sort of like in a good way. You know what I'm talking about? No, I got a quick smile from Max, but that's it. I got a minute.
I just don't know why everyone else is pretending otherwise.
But it's getting pretty quiet on the Zoom over here. No, obviously. So I'm not saying anything bad about that. You know, I'm just saying. But so to tell a story where you end up being the hero of the story in a non-bragging way, of course, because you don't want to go overdo it. That's fine. You know, but again, to make stuff up, you know, to create a, you know, situation which is not true, to manipulate the person to think you're somebody other, or the most, I can't believe I left one out. How about sending in your resume for a job?
What about it?
I think they think I think tw- I think your clothes.
Padding.
Right.
That
was,
yeah, you're not gonna lie because they can find out, but you can make the boring stuff sound like, wow, you made a huge impact, but it was like.
Well, no, okay, obviously that's cool. You could talk about, you know, how, but let's say you were in a sales division and whatever, the number was $1 million. And you say, well, because of our team, we were able to provide $3 million for the grocers. I mean, you just pump the numbers up like that.
Well, you shouldn't do that.
Oh, well, that's lying. That's
right.
Right. Correct.
You can increase or enhance. You don't have to give an exact number.
Correct. Correct. Right. Correct.
That's the smart way to do it.
Correct.
Checkable.
Correct.
Right. Well, you could get fired for that too. Again, personal.
But I understand that. But people who are involved, but people
like specific numbers on a resume, the percentages.
Okay, I'm not saying there's not what they call a, but I'm not saying there's not a workaround. But most people on resumes, most resumes given have factual, just flat out lies.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to do a lot of work at like a placement agency for people, and like the resumes, everything gets so inflated. And this question hurt my heart a little bit, I feel like, because everyone's like just has to like is trying to get their resume with a little bit of edge, and like because it all looks the same, and to get yourself to stand out, it's really tough. Like I can really feel the impulse and desire to make $1 million into $3 million.
Right. Or let's say a person, especially now, we have a situation now that close to 30, more than 30 million Americans are out of work. So you're going to have the gap. Well, the truth is actually not going to be bad because, the truth is since there's 30 million Americans out of work, it doesn't look so bad. But let's say a person had multiple jobs and it doesn't look good. So a classic move is you speak to the guy at two jobs ago and have them say that you just left them. So it doesn't look like you're bouncing around is a move. I mean, there's like 30 moves. There's inflating your GPA. There's even saying you went to other schools that you get degrees you didn't get because you're saying, are they going to really check all of this? Or is you're basically doing a poker bluff. They're not going to check all this. But when I was the executive director at MJE for a decade, I would get calls at least once a week from companies that were hired who were basically resume fact checkers. You know, lie or not lie. Rabbi Rosenthal. Yes, this is Darlene from, blah, 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 XYZ thing. Did you have an employee, Joe Smith? Yes, we did. I'm here to check the dates, and then whatever. All the kind of check. Now, why do they have to check? Because there's the assumption is, the chazaka, the legal halachic assumption is, that nearly all this is just Sheker City. There's Gnevas Das, there's straightforward Sheker, there's Gnevas Das, sales puffery, there's Ramos, business lying, and they have to hire another firm who's just going to go through line by line and call all the people out, Certainly, by the way, where it gets very critical is in the realm of political appointments. So when they have to vet somebody, because it's going to be embarrassing if something comes out. I mean, that's been, of course, a source of extreme embarrassment for many administrations when, their fantastic champion works out to be had multiple skeletons in the old closet there. Okay, we're out of time. I've given you a teaspoon of some of the issues. There's lying for profit, which basically is forbidden. Lying for peace, which, of course, is a mitzvah. And basically the key point is to have a mandate to be a truthful person for your own benefit, because you and your friends can only grow if you have an honest, if you're living in the world of honesty. If we all lie about each other, about how wonderful we are, we just stay in the rut in a no growth situation. So if your friend makes mistakes or you should tell your friends, be honest, look, I want to invite you, ask your friend, what do you think about how tonight went? I think XYZ. I really want you to tell me the MS. You should invite, I don't want to say, you want to invite critique. You want to get better in every part of your life. And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. But it's like going to be like, it's like they're ripping off the Band-Aid. You know what I mean? It's going to be better, but it's going to sting a little bit, but you will grow from that. And that's really the takeaway, to take the ethic of MS, and even though it's not simple and it's not always fun to hear, but in other words, the Talmud talks about the long road is the short road. That sometimes, if you walk in the road of improvement, it's the long route. That is the short route. And to try to create a culture among your friends, your inner circle friends, not your acquaintances, your inner friends, to be truthful to, as Stephanie said, to name the stuff, to call you out on stuff. Not in a mean, aggressive way. Do it in a private, soft, supportive, indirect manner. If you have one or two of those friends, you have gold. And if you don't have such friends, you need to get one or two. Guys, until next week, I want to wish you all the best. Enjoy.
Yep. Thank you.
All the best.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Take care. Thank you. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye.